Good evening, everybody. I want to welcome you to the first in a series of evening concerts this week here at Augusta. How's everybody feeling? Pretty good? Good. Glad to hear it. Before we get started, I want to remind you of a couple of things. First of all, during this evening's storytelling concert, we ask you please not to use flash bulbs for taking photographs. We also ask that you not tape the concert. JJ has her own tapes for sale, and she would prefer that you buy her tapes rather than tape your own. And I want to remind you that there are a couple of dances immediately after this concert tonight. One in the pavilion, and I believe that's square dancing and contra dancing, and another in the boiler house, and that is contra dancing only. So that happens immediately afterwards. Go out and have a good time, learn who everybody is, and check it out. I want to test something here. I want to check on something here. When I raise my right hand, I'd like you to repeat everything that I say, but only when my right hand is raised. When I put my hand down, I don't want you to say what I say. Does everybody understand that? Okay, let's try that out. Hello. 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 Goodbye. There's always a few. Well, most of you are listening, and that's good, because I wanted to test how well you listened to things, because storytelling has two parts, two main ingredients. There's not only the talking, the telling of what's going on, there's also the listening to what's happening. Listening is a very, very important part of storytelling. Let me do one more thing here before we get going. Today is a good day. Today is a very good day. Today is the best day. Yesterday is always in the past. And tomorrow never arrives. All we have is today. This is a good day to be with people that you like. It's a good day to listen to some stories. That's not a right hand up in the air, that's a hand to the ear. It's a good day to share important events, and we've got a wonderful storyteller this evening to share some stories with us all. Her name, as I said earlier, is JJ Renoa. She's not just a storyteller. In fact, I feel a little funny calling her a storyteller. She's really a person who works with words. She's published a couple of books. She sings. She does a lot of different things with words. And she's got another book, in fact, coming out this spring called Why Alligator Hates Dog. It's a book especially for children. Especially for children. I see a few out there. She's performed everywhere from preschools to prisons all across the country. And I found out an important thing about her, which I want to share with you. I mentioned the thing about how important it is to listen when you're doing storytelling. I found out from one of JJ's students this afternoon that she has the remarkable ability to listen very well to what other people have to tell her. And in my book, if you can listen to people and make people feel important, that's one of the greatest accomplishments you can have as a human being. So I'd like you to keep all those things in mind as we give a warm welcome to Ms. JJ Renoa.
Good evening. Anybody out there?
Good evening.
Now, I'm bad. I'm in one of those kind of moods, you know, where I feel like kind of playing with my audience tonight here a little bit. I'm here this week to teach people how to tell stories, but really what that means is to give people the freedom and confidence to tell stories. And I hope that as you listen to me this evening, maybe you'll get a little spark lit under you to get you telling some of your stories as well. The kind of stories that we're working on in my class now are personal stories. And so tonight, I thought I'd tell you some true life stories. But we need a theme, I think. A theme is a good thing when you're going to tell stories. And I thought that I'd talk a little bit about love. Do you love love? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I thought I'd talk a little bit about miracles. You know, in this age that we live in, sometimes we think miracles don't happen anymore, and those fairy tales in the books are far away. They don't happen these days. But when I look around at people in all the many countries that I visit, I see miracles happening all the time. Now, the first story I'm going to tell you is not so very long ago and so very far away. It's back to my childhood in South Louisiana. But we need a means to get us there, so I'm gonna teach you a little hand jive. It goes like this. You're gonna say down together, down together, down together. You with me? Here we go. Now we're gonna cross. Down together, down, cross. Down together, down, cross. Very good. Keep it going. Now I'm gonna say one, one, two. You wanna do it again? One, one, two. And let's put it all together. Down together, down cross, down together. One, one, two, and down together, down cross. Ooh, you're pretty good out there, I can see. Now we need to add a little music to this thing because we're fixing to travel back to 1963 down to Thibodaux, Louisiana. Here we go. Miss Mary Mack, dressed in black, silver buttons all down her back. Say hey y'all, hey y'all, hey y'all, hey y'all. She asked her mama for 15 cents. See the elephants jump that fence. Say hey y'all, hey y'all, hey y'all, hey y'all. They jumped so high, they touched the sky, didn't come back till 4th July. Say hey y'all, say hey y'all, hey y'all, hey y'all. Say hey y'all, hey y'all, hey y'all, hey y'all, hey y'all. I want to take you back to when I was about 5 years old. And you know, the world is filled with magic when you're five. Anything can happen. Remember? Remember? Remember how when you were five, trees could talk and things lived under your bed? Remember how you jumped in bed because something was underneath it? Remember how there was one place in your house you dared not go because something lived there? Maybe it had a name, maybe it didn't. Now, when I was a little girl, I was pretty fearless. I was pretty bad, actually. Drove all the grown-ups crazy. They couldn't do nothing with me. Sometimes they'd even lock the windows in my room because I'd crawl out them. I just had to get out and see the world. Now, I didn't think too much about driving grown-ups crazy until I really got to be about 5 years old and I got to know my grandmother. And this was my Daddy Jack's mama, and I thought she was mean. Didn't she always point her finger at me and say, Miss Pris? And I was insulted, because you remember at five how you hated to be called any name but your own name? Miss Pris, indeed. And she always forgot my birthday, and I knew it was because she didn't love me. She didn't love me as much as she loved all her other grandchildren. Miss Pris forgot my birthday. My brothers and sisters would get a dollar and a card. She didn't care nothing about me. And I hated to go to her house. Now, my grandmother, in the last years of her life, she lived in this little bitty old apartment. And it was down on what they called Railroad Avenue. And down there in South Louisiana, that railroad went right down the middle of the road. And her little street was called Easy Street. But there wasn't much easy about her street. It was a little dingy, three-room flat. And I hated to go there because every room was one of those rooms that a child hates. Every room had something living in it. You walk into the door. First of all, you came into the kitchen. Now, the kitchen wasn't a safe place because right beside the kitchen there was the bathroom. And the bathroom, I knew something lived in there, and the something was a big bathtub, and it had claw feet. And I was convinced at the age of 5, it walked around at night, looking for children who forgot to wash behind their ears. And it had a big shower head that came way down, a little circular shower ring, and I thought it was like the head of a snake would reach down and get you. So whenever I had to go to my grandmother's, I made certain I went to the bathroom first, because the whole time I would never go to the bathroom. But the rest of the house is where it got really creepy. The whole place smelled of my grandmother. Remember? You're smelled the same way, I bet. Talcum powder. Midnight in Paris. And there were strange things that filled every nook and cranny, every horizontal space in my grandmother's house. My grandmother called them knickknacks, bric-a-brac, and they were all made of china and porcelain. It seemed as though all you had to do was breathe on it and they'd crack and break, and some adult would be there saying, "Miss Pris, what have you broken now?" They were everywhere. Their eyes followed you, little porcelain heads mounted on plaques, looking at you. Little china owls with big eyes that followed you everywhere. But the worst of all were my grandmother's porcelain hands. They were wide and fragile, and they stretched out saying, "Give me your earrings, give me your loose change, give me your gum." But I thought, they were after me. They were after me, and I could never turn my back on those hands. They might grab me. And then there was my grandma's tiny bedroom with windows all around and Venetian blinds and her old, old furniture. I didn't know, you see, my grandmother was poor. It never occurred to me. I just thought she had real bad taste. Now, my grandmother was sort of scary to look at, too, because she was really tall, really skinny, very gaunt. And she wore thick glasses. And it looked like she had big, magnified bug eyes looking at you. And her hair was the color of a Brillo pad when you first take it out of a box. A light dusting of blue over it, and always tightly coiled and permed like Medusa's head. Well, I grew up, I have to confess, never enjoying my grandmother, never knowing her, convinced that she didn't like me, so how could I like her? I remember the day that she died, and we went to the funeral, and I was surprised because I wanted to feel something. But I didn't feel anything. Well, a lot of years passed, and I became a storyteller. And oh, I learned how to get stories from books and how to listen to people and get stories. And I began to dig into my own life and get stories, and to dig into my Cajun roots and get stories. But sometimes in life, we're granted a little miracle. And one night, I had a dream. And I dreamt I was there, back on Easy Street. And I walked through that apartment, and there was the tub with the claw feet. There were all the china objects, and I went into the bedroom. And there was my grandmother laying on that old blonde Depression era bed of hers with her blue woolly hair. And I sat down beside her on the bed and I said to her, "You never liked me." She says, "Of course I liked you. You called me Miss Briss. I thought you liked that name. I meant it as a compliment, because, girl, I liked your spirit." I said, "Well, how come you never sent me a birthday card with a dollar in it?" She says, "Look, kid, I was old. I forgot." And then my grandmother, she reaches out to me. She holds out her hands, and in my dream, those hands are made of china, and they're delicate and fragile, and they're reaching out to me just like the china hands of my childhood, and I didn't know quite what to do. But then a thought came to me, and I took my own hand, and I placed it in my grandmother's fragile porcelain hand. And when I touched her, that porcelain hand became warm and soft and human. I waked up from my dream, and I thought, things that make you go, hmm. Because you see, my grandmother had told me her life story, and these are stories I'd never heard before. So I went to my daddy, and I said, "Did this happen? Did that happen?" "Yeah," he said, "how'd you know about that?" I said, "Well, Grandma told me." And with her help, I wrote this song, and it's called Easy Street. Nothing came easy. Mama and Daddy, everything they had, they earned the hard way. But Mama always dreamed of a better life for the family, and Daddy said he'd get 'em to Easy Street someday. Ah, the winning talk like that. She'd shake her head and smile. She'd say, "Hon, best things in life are free. I don't want no fancy house on the rich side of town. I'm on Easy Street as long as you love me." But Daddy had his pride, and I guess he had to try. So he worked his life away, running down that dream. But there were always bills to pay,
another baby's on the way, he'd say. Looks like we'll never get to Easy Street. Although when he'd talk like that, she'd shake her head and smile. She'd say, hon, best things in life are free. I don't want no fancy house on the rich side of town. I'm on Easy Street as long as you love me. Now mama's living all alone down by the track. She shares a three-room flat. Daddy's memory. And by some strange stroke of luck, Daddy's dream came true at last. 'Cause Grandma's address reads 103 Easy Street. Now, I told you we're gonna tell some stories about love. You know, love will find you in the strangest places, and miracles will too. I have to make a confession. When Friday rolled around this week, I thought, oh, I really don't wanna go. I wonder if Margot would believe me if I told her my grandmother died. Or I broke my arm. I thought, no, I can't do that. Got to do the right thing. So I very sadly told my children goodbye, and I packed up the car, and I knew it was going to be a two-day long drive. And I started down the road, and I thought, now, wait a minute. I'm looking at this all wrong. I'm going to Augusta. There's going to be music and good people and good times. So kind of switched my brain to another position. And you know now, when you do that, strange things can happen. So I'm cruising down the road, coming up the highway from Charlotte, get into the mountains of North Carolina there, got into West Virginia, and I stopped at a Hardee's. Got back on the road, and somehow I was totally lost. I didn't know where I was, and all I kept seeing was signs that said, pavement ends, pavement ends. Well, I'm thinking, okay, it's going to be a farm-to-market road, but it was a real narrow road, and I thought, now, there's got to be some place I can turn around here, but there just wasn't. So I kept going and going, thinking, well, there'll be something, pavement ends. Okay, I know, pavement ends, and all of a sudden, the pavement ended. I went over a hill, and I mean, there was no road. There was nothing there. And I just started going downhill, and I thought, oh, no. Now get your minds out the gutter. There's children here. And this is the truth, y'all. There must have been a bunch of rain down there or something, because I got onto the muddiest, slickest dirt sort of path, and I slung around like this way, and I ended up pointing uphill, which was good for me, because downhill there was a big old river. I was fixing to go into that thing, and I was sitting there just trying to catch my breath. I thought, okay, as soon as my hands quit shaking, I'm going to try to get up the road. So I kind of let the windows down. It's one of the cars with power windows, you know, you get from budget rent a car. And I put the windows down, and I couldn't believe it. I'm hearing angels singing. Really? They're over there singing, softly and tenderly, Jesus is calling. I thought, Lord, am I having an after-death experience here? What's going on? Well, I got curious, so I get out the car, and I kind of crept down there to look down around this bank here on this river, and you know what was going on? It was baptizing, an old-time river baptizing. Now, have you ever seen one? They're really a sight to see. And you don't see them too often nowadays because they have those dunking tanks built right into the churches. But this church must have been some poor little church, and they didn't have that tank, or they just felt like cooling off on a hot day. But there they were, and I watched that sinner going down in her robes. She went down gurgling and bubbling and came up shouting hallelujah. And I thought, boy, am I lucky I slid down this hill. And I don't care if I got to be here all day, because somebody's going to help me get back up. Well, I got back in the car, and I couldn't believe it. Shoom, went right on up the hill. But it got me to thinking about baptizing and about religion and all that sort of thing. You know, Flannery O'Connor once said that the South is Christ-haunted. And I think it's kind of true. These days it's become real popular. We like to spread the Lord on everything, kind of like margarine, real thin. Like if you go down to the 7-Eleven, there's a big sign in my little town down there in Georgia that says, "Best biscuits in town. Jesus is Lord." I love these signs. Over in Atlanta now, during the last World Series, they had one that said, "Go Braves, chop for Jesus." But I saw a great one in West Virginia. This one took the cake. Now, it said, "Through with sin, come on in." Now, this was one of those Renaissance, and it was parked out in front of one of those sort of dubious-looking churches that spring up every now and then. And somebody had come along behind whoever put those first words up, and they had written in something that looked like red lipstick. It said, "If not, cop 1-900-KISS." Well, you know, even though in the South, you know, we got a church on every block. Isn't it true? Can you testify? It is true. We got more churches than we got people. Now, we like to call them First Methodist, First Baptist, First Episcopalian, this, but really, when you get down to it, we really only got two denominations in the South. You have got your sprinklers and your dunkers. Now, let me educate you. I know some of y'all are from the North, so I'll just educate you on this thing. It's very important to know. If you're going to know about bluegrass and all these other things, you got to know a little bit about religion in the South. Now, a sprinkler is usually a Catholic, Episcopalian. We call Episcopalians high Catholics, where I come from. They're sort of even more Catholic than Catholic. And they sprinkle when they baptize, right? Just a few little splash of water there. But now the dunkers, they say, "Whoa, no way. This way yonder too much sin to wash off with a few drops of water." So they like to get you in the water and just really dunk you down good, hold you under a while till you're turning blue. Then they know they got that pure old devil out you, at least for a little while. Now, I come from a family of sprinklers, because in South Louisiana, we're mostly Catholic. But we have this special brand of Catholicism. It's kind of different. We worship le bon Dieu, the good Lord. And our good Lord, well, he kind of likes life. He kind of likes love and a good drink of whiskey now and then and a deck of cards, while he's been known to play the devil and win. Well, now, my people come from a long line of what we call tretus, healers. And the way you heal is with holy water. But you got to understand, in early Louisiana, there weren't too many priests. They didn't want to come down to the swamps, you know, and minister to the alligators and the Cajuns. Now, we were about on the same level as those alligators, you understand. So the people started creating their own kinds of rituals. And one of those was to make holy water. So for many generations, the women in my family have made holy water, and they heal with it. They're called tretus. Now, the way it works is, if you want some real good holy water, you strip your children down butt naked, and you put them out in the first spring rain. It's supposed to keep you healthy. My mama did it with all her children. I never had measles or mumps or chicken pox or nothing. So maybe it worked. Well, now, mama, that was all she knew. She was a little backwood bayou girl. She didn't know nothing about all these other sprinkling religions. You know, she only knew her little religion, and she knew nothing about the Dunkers either, because the people around her all did it the same way. And around 1945, my mama was working over there in Houston. She was working at an airplane plant. She was building bombers for the war effort. And finally, the war ended. And that's when my mama, a little teenage girl, 16 at the time, met my daddy, Jack. And you know, she'd grown up on those movies with Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire, you know. And she dreamed of her prince who was going to come and take her away and take care of her. Because she was tired of working, and she was tired, just tired. Now, my daddy, now he came from a little bit of different part of the country. He came over there from East Texas. He was a farm boy. He didn't know nothing about nothing green and wet behind the ears. And he went off to the war. And you know, he'd never been further than Lake Charles, Louisiana. And suddenly he found himself over there in Europe commanding men and watching them die if he made a mistake. He went over there and saw things that really nobody should ever have to see. He was with them when they came to the gates of many a concentration camp. And I can't describe to you what he saw, for even he cannot speak of it. He came back from the war. He was all shot up, had 1.5 lungs, 2 purple hearts, and a silver star. And like many young men of the time, he was searching for something. And he met my mama and fell deep in love with her brown eyes. And she fell in love with this strong man. And so they got married. And they set about, like so many people of the time, to affirm their love and have a family. Now, all you are the result of a whole lot of life-affirming going on after the war. But my parents, they had a problem. You see, my daddy came back and he wasn't whole, not in body and not in spirit either. At night, when it should have been their honeymoon, he was down on the floor and he was yelling to his man, "Get down, get down!" Back then, they didn't have a name. They didn't have a syndrome to call what he had. And you just didn't talk about it. Now, my mama's getting worried. Her wedding had been months ago, and no life-affirming had happened yet. And so she tried everything. She got some of those catalogs that come in brown paper wrappers. She tried ordering some of those outfits. That just turned my daddy away even further. And time passes, and she's beginning to think he don't love her, he don't care about her. How can this be? And she did what women do when they're really worried. She turned to her best friend. Now, there was a woman who lived on the other side of their apartment over there named Dolores. And Dolores, when she heard Mama's problem, oh, she had the answer. She says, "Sister, I'm going to tell you what you got to do. I'll tell you what your problem is. You have got to get Jack down there to the church and get him baptized." Mama says, "Well, me? I think he's been baptized." "What you talking about? When was he baptized?" "When he was a baby." "Oh, that don't count. Just a few little drops of water, that don't count." She says, "You bring him down to my church." "Why, Brother Robert Earl can cure anybody of anything. You never heard the gospel preached until you heard Brother Robert Earl." Well, Mama, she thought this over. She thought, maybe it would help. So she went to my daddy, to Jack, and she said, "Would you get baptized? Maybe it could help." And you know, he must have been pretty desperate, because my daddy's not a religious man. But he said he'd do it if she'd go first. And so these two sprinklers, these two Cajun Catholics, head down to the church. Now, I got to tell you something about Brother Robert Earl. I do believe that Elvis got the idea for his hairstyle from Brother Robert Earl. Now, some folks weren't too full of praise for him. They said that he was quick and he was slick and he was known to get his hands on your pocketbook and nothing flat and say a prayer at the same time. Some people called him secretly Brother Rabbit Oil. And Brother Rabbit Oil would travel the countryside and he had a big old panel station wagon with scripture printed on the sides, and he'd get up on the top and he'd preach from the parking lots. And he'd get a person here and there to come to his little church, only had about 30 members. And you know, he prided himself on how many souls he could save. Now, you know, there's only so many times you can save 30 people. So he was always out beating the bushes trying to get new members. So he was more than happy to see my mama and daddy walk in that day. Now, my mama, she's wearing the only nice thing she had. That was her wedding suit. And it was lilac colored. I have the scarf from it from this day. And she had a nice lilac colored silk blouse, the only silk blouse she ever had in her whole life, and she was proud of that. Well, she comes in, and Brother Rabbit Oil takes her hand, and he said, "Now, sister, are you prepared to be washed in the blood of the Lamb?" "I think so." Of course, she didn't have an idea about what was fixing to happen. She was counting on a few little sprinkles here. And so he gives her this robe, and he says, "Now, sister, go put this robe on. And when you hear the music begin, you come on down, and we're going to baptize you, and we'll get your husband next." Well, Mama, she goes into this little back room, and she's looking at that robe, and she's thinking, you know, this is a pretty nice blouse. What if he splashes on it? She says, "I'll just take it off." So she takes all her clothes off and she puts on that robe. And she's waiting back there, waiting. Meantime now, all the congregation is coming up. Had a full house that day, 32 people. It was one of those little storefront kind of splinter of a splinter of a splinter of a splinter of a church. You know how they have the first kind of church and then you'll see the second. This was about the 27th down the line. And there was old Brother Rufus. He was coming down the aisle showing people their place. Now, he was as cold and distant as death itself. The man was never known to crack a smile. Sister Lulu was at the keyboard, played the worst god-awful music you ever heard in your life. And there was Sister Dolores in the back. Now, Sister Dolores was what you call a big boned woman. She was beyond big boned, actually, much beyond. But she was real nice. Well, that day, Brother Rabbit all gets to preaching. He's a preaching, and pretty soon he's got everybody pulling their money out of their pockets and they're collecting it in the baskets. And then comes the great finale to his service. And the music began to play. "Softly but tenderly, Jesus is calling. Who will be saved today? Who will be saved today?" Nobody was coming up. He couldn't believe it. He could never face his congregation again if he couldn't save at least one soul each Sunday. They kept count up there on a little chalkboard. What was he going to do? Bring out the woman. Baptize her. That'd get him fired up good. So he says, Sister Ruby, come on out. And she came out with her little robe clutched around her and feeling a little bit uncomfortable in front of all these people who's staring at her. And he leads her to this big blue velvet curtain and he pulls the curtain back. And she looked. She'd never seen one of those Dunkin' tanks before. And this one was the deluxe model. They had to send off for that one. Had a scene behind it painted of Jesus walking on the water, and the front of that tank was made of glass. You could see right through it. And down below were painted fishes swimming in the sea. Well, he takes her up there to the steps. She had to climb up about, 4 feet, and you get up there and he says, "Now, sister, just relax. In a minute, I'm going to take you down. And you just relax and you just let the full gospel flow over you. Well, he gets her up there on that step and he says, and now we're going to baptize Sister Ruby. And he kind of gave her a little shove backwards, kind of getting her into the water. She said, hey, who you pushing? She didn't like that. Her mom didn't raise her to be pushed by anybody, especially a preacher. He said, no, 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 sister, you don't understand. We're going to baptize you now. And now we're going to wash this soul clean. And he gives her a little shove. She says, I said, quit pushing me. He said, sister, now calm down. You don't understand. We got to baptize you. That's what you're here for after all. She said, I don't understand. But it was too late. He saw his opportunity and he shoved her back, got one hand under her head and one hand on her nose, pinched it tight, and shoom, plunk, goes down deep into that 4-foot Dunkin' tub. And her robe began to float up like a giant white cloud. Right around her neck where it settled. And there was my mama and her all together self with that glassed in tank. Well, I want you to know, things started jumping in that congregation. People were feeling the spirit. And oh, my brother Rufus, nobody'd ever seen him jumping and singing and talking in tongues like that before. And Sister Lulu, who could never play a decent chord in her life, was playing like Beethoven on that piano that day. She was inspired. Thank you, Jesus. And Sister Dolores in the back, that big bone woman who was so nice, why, she just plumb forgot who she was, lost her senses entirely, took 4 men to sit on top of her to restrain her from pulling her clothes off and jumping into that Dunkin' tub. And my mama, she stood there, and hymnals were whizzing through the air, and people were rolling in the aisles and speaking in tongues, and the organ was pounding and the piano was pounding, and people were jumping in their seats and shouting hallelujah. And she thought, Jack's gonna kill me. And she looked down at my daddy and he looked up at her and he began to laugh. And he laughed harder and harder and harder until finally he began to weep. And soon the tears were just flowing like a river. It was like something inside of him just burst and it flowed out. And my mama pulled that robe down best she could, kind of looked like a see-through leotard by this time. And she went to her husband. And they affirmed life. No clothes were removed, but I know that it was in that moment that I and my brothers and sisters were created. Now, when I heard this story, I could tell my mama was kind of embarrassed. I said, Mama, don't be embarrassed. I said, you know there's plenty of these old phony preachers out here trying to get people's money. You can't help it. You were just kind of needy. And my daddy says, whoa, baby sister, whoa. He said, now I'll tell you something. Maybe it's true that Brother Rabbit Oil eventually did run off with the deacon's daughter and now he's selling used cars over there in Shreveport. But let me tell you something, daughter. Le bon Dieu works in mysterious ways. And you know, a miracle did happen that day. My daddy inspired me. And I wrote a song about an old muddy river. Maybe you know one too.